Thank you, Andrew. I now welcome Holly Krambeck, the Carbon Finance Unit of the World Bank, to give her presentation.
Thanks. I'm going to talk a little bit about how carbon markets work, a little bit about what the World Bank Carbon Finance Unit does, and some lessons that we've learned from the Clean Development Mechanism that we think could be applied to the aviation sector. And I should say that the next few slides are a little basic, but I was thinking, since the aviation sector is considering leveraging carbon markets to support energy efficiency and greenhouse gas emissions reduction goals, since you guys are engineers and technical specialists, you might appreciate it if we take a little step back and just talk about the principles of these markets, how they work, what they do, and then you can carry those principles with you for your advocacy and for your design of what's to come. So, as my colleague Andrew said in his previous presentation, the carbon market, there isn't one market, there's a bunch. It's a patchwork of markets spread across the world, each one with different standards, different regulations, and even though the commodity traded in these markets is all carbon, these commodities aren't interchangeable within the different markets. So to wrap your head around it, there's really only two key concepts that you need to take away. One, compliance or regulatory versus voluntary markets, and allowance versus offset markets. If you get these, you are masters. Okay, carbon markets. Compliance markets are those where government has created maximum limits to emissions by sector, and if an entity exceeds these limits, then they have to pay a significant penalty. In the voluntary market, companies set their own caps, usually out of a sense of corporate social responsibility or impending doom or what have you. And the prices on these markets reflect the penalties. So in the compliance markets, like the European Union Emissions Trading Scheme, the prices can be a little higher than the voluntary markets, say Chicago Climate Exchange, where I think emissions are trading now at 10 cents a ton. That's really low. Now, the best way to describe the difference between allowance and offset markets really is through example. So let's take a hypothetical set of coal-based power plants, power plant A, not too big, power plant B, a little larger, and let's say a European country, maybe Spain, indicated to these plants how many tons of greenhouse gases they're allowed to emit each year. Let's say the little guy is allowed to emit 10,000 tons, and these numbers are for illustrative purposes only. And the larger plant can emit 15,000 tons. We wait through the compliance period and see what happened. And at the end, we see the little guy was pretty good, very efficient. They didn't use up all of their allowances. They have 2,000 tons left. But the big guy exceeded and emitted too much, 17,000 tons. So what this means is that the big guy can then purchase the leftover allowances from the small guy in order to meet their emissions reduction cap and avoid paying a penalty. So the purpose of the emissions market then is to take all these little guys, big guys, those who exceeded, those who didn't use up all their allowances, and bring them together so that they can meet their goals. Now, the allowances are allocated either via an auction or they can be given away. In the European scheme, a lot of the allowances were given. In the US Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, the allowances were auctioned. And I know you guys will be very happy to hear that the revenue generated from these auctions was devoted to sustainability and energy efficiency programs in the different participating states. Parallel to the allowance markets are the offset markets. This is where the Clean Development Mechanism comes in. So we take our power plants, so same situation, the large plant, they exceeded their cap. But in addition to being able to purchase emissions reductions from the smaller guy, we have this really uppity developing country supported by the World Bank, and they upgraded their old diesel bus fleet to CNG hybrid, very exciting, and so they're able to reduce their emissions. So now this polluting power plant has a choice. They can either purchase the allowances from the other power plant, or they can purchase the emissions reductions in the form of offsets generated by the sustainable program in the developing country. And their decision will be largely based on price, which one is cheaper for them, and also some permissions in the market. How many offsets can you get from the developing countries versus how many to meet your caps you have to purchase from other firms. So offsets, just to summarize, they're project-based. Not anything will qualify as an offset. It has to be something that's readily measurable over time, and it has to be real. And one of the trickiest criteria for generating an offset is that it has to be additional. And what we mean by that is the entity generating the offset has to prove that if not for the revenue they get from selling their offsets, they would have never implemented their project. Piece of cake, right? So, Clean Development Mechanism, the most famous offset scheme around, targeted at developing countries. The idea is, when setting up these Kyoto schemes, was the knowledge that the majority of growth in greenhouse gas emissions and energy consumption is going to come from the developing world. And the likelihood of developing countries to agree to caps is pretty small. So, through the offset scheme, the developed countries can provide funding and, in many cases, technical expertise to encourage developing countries to reduce. The price per ton for an offset is based on the market, and there's very specific project types that are eligible. I'm going to talk a little bit about more about those in a minute. But first, just to be clear, carbon finance has a very specific use in a project. What I mean by that is when you're designing a project from scratch and you want to do a pilot, carbon finance isn't really good for you. You want grants, grants such as the Global Environment Facility, which is offered by all the multilateral development banks, and you can use this funding, usually $8 million, $10 million, to try something new out. When you're involved in construction, grants won't do. You need something more substantial. You want something more like a climate investment fund or a clean technology fund. These are forms of concessional finance, zero interest, 8 to 10 year grace periods that enable countries to engage in sustainable projects, low emissions projects that otherwise would be difficult to do without this concessional finance. And then we have operations and maintenance. And this is where carbon finance becomes quite useful, because carbon finance revenue is received on an annual basis, and it's based on performance. It's something that could be used to encourage sustainable operations and maintenance over time. So if you have a project, you developed a new aircraft and a fancy new engine that's very efficient, but it wasn't well maintained, well then the annual revenue received for the engine would be smaller. So it's performance-based. And then we have all this fancy stuff, but I'm running out of time. So the World Bank Carbon Finance Unit, we manage about $2.5 billion in carbon funds. These are funds set up by entities that are capped under the Kyoto Protocol, and on their behalf, we identify projects in developing countries that reduce emissions, we develop them, and then we purchase the offsets or emissions reductions on behalf of these European entities that are capped. We also work on what we call next generation funds and mechanisms, understanding that after 2012, as indicated earlier, there's a little uncertainty on what's going to happen next. So we're coming up with a few plan Bs. We also provide greenhouse gas emissions monitoring and modeling advisory internally. And I think what's interesting here is recently we've been in discussions with the International Maritime Organization, which is facing very similar issues as the aviation industry, providing advisory on setting up an internal cap and trade scheme, means to purchase offsets, etc. If I were you, I would link up with the maritime industry together. I think you would have a stronger front on advocating sectoral-based schemes. Just very quickly, there are many tools that we've already talked about through these sessions on estimating greenhouse gas emissions from aviation activities. But there actually aren't that many internationally recognized tools for estimating emissions reductions. And emissions reductions, it's a tricky one, because in order to know how much your project reduces emissions, you have to guess what would the emissions have been otherwise. What is the baseline? But fortunately for us, through the CDM, there are a number of methodologies that may be applicable with a few small tweaks to aviation. Here are a few. For operations, these are existing methodologies. And when I say methodology, what I mean is if you go on the UNFCCC website, click the methodology section, click one of these items, then you get a document that shows how this methodology can be used, formulae, parameters that are used, ongoing monitoring requirements. Each methodology is a small guide on how to estimate emissions and emissions reductions over time in a way that's auditable. And I understand you're going to get copies of these presentations, so you can just have this for fun. Now, there are some limitations in the CDM for transport projects, and transport including aviation, of course. Namely, the CDM works very well for the implementation of technologies, a new engine, alternative fuel, what have you. But it doesn't work as well for things that involve long-term policy changes or changes in the way operations are done. For example, you could use a CDM methodology for a new aircraft engine, but you wouldn't really be able to use one if you were to improve air traffic management. Because with improved air traffic management, it's very difficult to say what emissions would have been if the planes weren't as efficiently scheduled or directed. Some post-2012 alternatives under consideration to move beyond some of these limitations are our Carbon Partnership Facility. This is a new fund that we've set up that targets projects that are sectoral or citywide in nature. Nationally appropriate mitigation actions, these have been discussed at the Copenhagen, although not approved, where rather than generate credits project by project, very inefficient, high transaction costs, we work with countries to develop national or regional schemes to reduce emissions and improve energy efficiency and set monitorable targets in terms of energy consumption and efficiency, which is a little easier. And finally, performance-based lending, where we offer a loan and with a variable interest rate, and the interest rate is tied to energy efficiency performance of a project, where if a project is more energy efficient than a certain benchline, then they get a reduced interest rate, and everybody wins, because when a project is more efficient, operating costs are lower, we know it's more sustainable, so we have more confidence in the project, and the client gets a lower rate. And I am done. And finally, I know some later presentations this afternoon given by my other colleagues at the bank will talk about some additional resources we have to support climate-based initiatives in the aviation. Thank you.